Alice Jones is the author of The Knot, which was winner of the 1992 Beatrice Hawley Award, of Isthmus, winner of the 2000 Jane Kenyon Chapbook Award, and of Gorgeous Morning, recipient of the 2001 Robert H. Winner Award from the Poetry Society of America. She also received the Poetry Society's Lyric Poetry Award in 2006, and her poem Spell won first place in Narrative Magazine's first annual poetry contest. Her most recent poetry collection is titled Plunge, and that came out just this year from Apogee Press. She's a poet, she's a physician, she's a psychoanalyst. Alice Jones has seen her work published in a great number of journals, including Plowshares, Poetry, The Boston Review, The Denver Quarterly, Antioch Review. The list goes on and on. Suffice it to say that these are just the poems that the best poets hope to see their work appear in. Her honors include fellowships from the Breadloaf Writers Conference and from the National Endowment for the Arts. And in 1994, her work was included in the Best American Poetry, edited by A.R. Ammons. Alice Jones, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you here, and I'm so pleased that you'll be coming to Davis tomorrow to read at the John Atsoulis Gallery as part of the Poetry Night reading series.
I'm looking forward to it.
I bet one of the first questions that you get is, how is it that you make time in your creative as well as professional life to maintain your duties as a psychoanalyst while still writing award-winning books of poetry?
I don't have any clear answer to that. I find the time where I can in between things, and find the work is very generative, both for thinking and writing.
Let's hear some more about that. I know that there are all sorts of rules about what you can and can't say, especially can't say about clients that you see. But I'm sure that in terms of the human spirit and the challenges that we all face, that you come across all sorts of examples of struggle and loss and so forth. And I'm wondering if you could say more about the relationship between your work as a psychoanalyst and a therapist, to the extent that you see yourself as that, and the sort of themes that come up in your books of poetry.
Well, there's so many overlaps, but I think one of the ones that engages me the most is to hear people speaking about their internal world or struggles or traumas or what moves them. People often speak in very moving and wonderful language, that when people are being most themselves, their own character is so much in the words they choose and use, that I think listening to language in that intense way is useful for me in my own work, but it's also just quite moving to hear.
Absolutely. Do you live in the East Bay of the
San Francisco
Bay
Area? That's right. Uh-huh.
So when I lived in Berkeley, I noticed that, and this was more than 20 years ago, but I noticed that even in the laundromat or the dented can store or certainly the co-op, I would find myself in engaging and sometimes even intellectual conversations with the residents there. And what you say about language intrigues me, because I bet with an expectation of certain education of your clientele that you actually will come across people who use language in interesting and intriguing ways that is not rooted only in whatever they're struggling with psychologically.
I think everybody does, whatever their level of education, when they're saying what's emotionally most real and important to them, the words get very interesting.
Absolutely. We're chatting with Alice Jones this afternoon. She's the author of a brand new book of poetry called Plunge from Apogee Press. Could you say a little bit about Plunge and what sort of themes in particular you explore in this book?
Sure. Plunge is a very particular project. It's a sequence of sestinas, which is an odd, archaic form, very repetitious in its end words. Each poem has six end words that repeat over and over again in a set pattern. So this revolving quality of words and threads braided together, for me, very much captures the way imagination and mind work. So the form felt like it very much suits my style of thinking. And then the poems are in that form, and then the form dissolves. There are a sequence of poems in which there's a festina, and then the form gets smaller and smaller until it vanishes into a little three-line poem. So something about both building the complex architecture and shape of the poem and then dissolving it very much appealed to me.
Excellent.
So I think I'm probably of an age to be interested in themes of dissolving as well as themes of building and putting together.
When you think about your influences, and we've been talking a little bit about the professional work that you do, who are some of the other poets or schools of poetry that that you see and hear resonating in your own verse?
I don't really have any allegiance to any one school, and am happy to read and borrow from anything that appeals to me and that sounds like interesting language. So in terms of classic people that appeal to me, Gerard Manley Hopkins, Emily Dickinson, Whitman, people like that I read when I was young, I think all inhabit my imagination, and their rhythms or their words, I find something coming across that has that shape to it that reminds me of them.
Excellent. Well, I think people at home would love to hear an example of your work. I know that you've prepared some longer poems and some short ones.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you might start with a longer piece so that people can get a sense of the poetry of Alice Jones.
Very good. What I'll start with is a poem called Muddy Hollow, and that's the name of a trail in Point Reyes, and it's a beautiful wetland sort of hike very close to the coast. So it's a poem that's both in that geography and then, as many poems are in this book, the ramblings of the mind and where those thoughts on the coast go to. So this is Muddy Hollow. Sun-splashed green reeds, silver pond, a whirl of red wings and their throaty notes, piercing calls, the clouds' dappled shadows, reflected camouflage, wind-struck water, arriving one by one, the light, the birds, the song, governed by half-seen forces, a mottled ocean beyond the hills, like rumpled felt. And beyond that far sweep, mistranslated nations, a whirl of languages, brushwork, intense, governed by tones, Cantonese, nine, Mandarin, four notes, to sound the textures of SHs, Zs, R slurred arrivals on an alien ear. Container ships drop cargo, shadowed by ice, uncounted people hidden in shadows, hungry commerce, convertibles in number beyond need, tennis shoes, yellow rayon dresses, new arrivals in the Goodwill store, sent back across the ocean. A whirl of exchange and loss, fierce need. It's been noted how commodities flow uphill, cash governed, rolling towards whoever has. We're lost. The map governed us, but still, that rising hill shouldn't be shadowing the marshland. White egret sounds one harsh note, unfolds, flies off, swallows dip and swirl just beyond reach. Fine gnats precede them, cowslips, lacy whirl, paintbrush, grasses. We're hoping for arrival, a state of being, constant and enduring. What arrives? Water and what the wind does with it, ungoverned, intersecting circles of light and dark, a whirl of unshaped shapes, glints dissolve into shadows, the other hemisphere, foreign sounds, beyond the easy eye, the listening ear, lost echo, a note of loss, ours and the far worlds. We note and go on seeing, it's all one place arriving at the possible, impossible but lived lives beyond one being's grasp. 10 billion fates ungoverned. tin-roofed houses, small luxury of sautéed chicken, shadows of birds flying over wetlands, geographies, print, and whirl. The whirl of mind, braid-patterned lines, a note of mauve shadow on the pelted hills, arrival of a governed darkness, this order, this beyond. 2. Sun-splashed notes of birdsong, throat-piercing, shadow-dappling. Song is a camouflaged ocean, untranslatable. Brushworked hills. Language contains the swept texture of dropped sounds beyond the ear's store, converting goodwill into a whirl of exchanges. Yellow dresses flow hungrily downhill. Beyond reach, the map, to our regret. Sound swallows light, painted grasses. Water, what the mind does with it. Unshaped shapes in the ungoverned hemisphere, the foreign eye, noting the arrival of light of a billion small fates while geography is flying through a patterned mind, the pelted darkness. 3. Camouflaged arrival of the cloud's ocean, a rumpled language dropping its cargo of ours, converting need into cash, goodwill into rayon. Ungoverned cowslips dip in the marshland's whirl. A state of enduring, unshaped glints, dissolved beings, the impossible world beyond pattern. 4. Throaty ocean translates cargo downhill. Luxuries lost. The other hemisphere's wetland map. 5. Untranslatable light maps the other hemisphere. The mind's braided whirl.
That was Muddy Hollow by my guest, Alice Jones. Alice Jones, the poet, will be reading tomorrow evening here in the city of Davis at the John Itzulis Gallery. That's at 521 First Street at the corner of First and E Streets, part of the Poetry Night reading series. If you'd like to find out more about Alice Jones, you could visit her website, or poetryindavis.com. Remind me what your the URL for your website, Alice?
www.alicejones.net.
Excellent. I really enjoyed hearing your poem, Muddy Hollow. It intrigued me on a number of levels, one of which is that I heard the word, I think it was billion, a few times,
mm-hmm.
and just the idea of how do we represent the kind of the onslaught of visual data, especially in the natural world, and how challenging and necessary that is. And then we were talking about Hopkins before, and I just love the mix of spondees and alliterative lines of poetry. You're doing really fascinating things with sound. And one can tell that these are words that have been well honed, well sharpened, probably over many iterations and revisions.
Well traveled, and the sestina requires that they travel around several times, and each a number of the words like whirl and shadows and governed cycle through the poem over and over again. And then the poem, as it pares down to a shorter and shorter poem, is using basically the same language as the large poem, just in a more condensed and distilled form.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful and really well done. I bet it's a pleasure to read as well.
They're fun because the form just, it has its own engine that just pulls both the writer and I hope the reader along with it.
And also the sestina, for the knowledgeable reader, raises expectations that you're listening on a couple different levels, especially if you've written a few sestinas yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know to pay attention to look for, to listen for the repeated words, and to almost imagine what the lines would be like.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I'll have a few more questions for my guest, Alice Jones. If you'd like to find out more about her meanwhile, you could visit her website, which is alicejones.net. Alice Jones is my guest this afternoon. She's the author of a number of books of poetry, award-winning books such as The Knot, which won the 1992 Beatrice Hawley Award, Isthmus, winner of the 2000 Jane Kenyon Chapbook Award, and Gorgeous Morning, which won the Robert H. Winner Award from the Poetry Society of America, which I must say is really a big deal. Her new book is titled Plunge from Apogee Press. She'll be reading tomorrow night at the John Atsoulis Gallery here in the city of Davis. Hope you will come out and see that. I'll be there, as will the producer of this radio show, Evan White. Right now we have Alice Jones on the live line, and we are talking about poetry. Alice, I was talking to a New York Times bestselling author of thrillers this last week, and he said that just as he's gearing up for one of his next books to come out, he already has to be thinking about the book after that. And so he's of two minds, editing one and already outlining the other. And I'm wondering for you, now that your most recent book, Plunge, has been published, if you're already thinking about your next poetic project.
Yes, it's well underway. And I think that given the lag time between writing the poems, collecting them in a book, having it come out, often that can be a process of years rather than months. So
right.
Unlike the thriller world, there's a lot of time to begin the next project. So I am trying to work on something that involves both some family stories and some of the experience of doing my work without telling anybody else's story. So it's more of my what's floating through my mind at the end of the day.
Right. We have a saying in the world of teaching here at UC Davis, and that is that you can make fun of, or you should make fun of, no particular group when you're standing up in front of a classroom, though you are allowed to make fun of yourself and, I suppose, of your own family. And there, I guess that might be an analogous rule for therapists and psychiatrists, that you can tell your own stories, you just can't tell other people's stories.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Now, when I was teaching our advanced poetry workshop here at UC Davis over this past summer, I was hearing many questions from my students about the daunting world of putting out a book. We were just talking about that, in part because they recognize that many of the books that they most like and respect, when they open it up, they find out that a great number of the poems had already been published in journals and magazines. And so it's almost like they have to go through the whole process twice of getting their work published.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering how you approach that. Obviously, your work has appeared in some of the best possible journals of poetry and creative writing in the United States, including Poetry Magazine. And so I'm wondering if you go about this systematically throughout the year, if you set aside a time every week, every month, every season. How do you go about figuring out where you're going to send your work and the process that you go through to do it?
The process involves great randomness. I think sending out is a good thing to do when you're not writing or you're puzzling about where to go with your writing, you're in an in-between space and you're hoping to reconnect to the work. Then looking at what you want to send out or giving it another read to see what kind of editing it might need before sending it out, that always seems to me like it's not quite a waste of time, but it's a use of downtime that can be productive. And in terms of where to send, I just look at whatever magazines I've enjoyed reading lately, and there are just dozens and dozens of small magazines that are so full of new and interesting work that there really are a lot of choices.
Do you keep literary journals and magazines in the waiting room of your office when
you
see clients?
I do.
That's great. And do you include the ones where you have something published, or do you usually keep those aside? Because, you know, my therapist was often careful not to reveal too much to me about her own life, A, because it was none of my business, and B, because I'm sure she likes to have that separation. But the poems we write are often very revelatory about our innermost thoughts.
Yeah, I would never put my own work in the waiting room, but I do have Plowshares and Ziziba there, among other journals. And I don't know that you can consider The New Yorker a poetry journal, but there's some things in there. And it's very interesting to see how some people get very attached to a poem or a story in the waiting room and spend time with it over the weeks.
That's great. I mean, we usually see two poems a week in the New Yorker, at least, and often some of our most intriguing and substantive verse. So I always look for the poems when I get my copy. Well, speaking of poems, Alice Jones, I'm wondering if you could share with us another poem, perhaps a shorter one.
I've brought a handful of very short poems. I can either read these one at a time or give you two or three of them all together.
Why don't we have a few together? That would be nice.
This is a very different project. This is my last book, Gorgeous Morning, and these are all very short prose poems. And they're ones where I was working in a more focused way on particular sounds and making collages of one sound. So this first poem is called Lose, and the sound I was thinking about was plane. Lose, the disappearance of plane song, a narrowing aperture. Always complaining, the plaintiff lost his suit, just trying to sustain himself on grievance, left hungry. Plainly grieving for what you never had, naked rapture, nature's raptors. Time's plane taking off into our unclaimed future, plaintively looking back at what we can't recapture. This one is called Plum, and I was very interested in the UMB or OMB sound and how it lumbers along. Plum. With aplomb, that's how he handles things. There's a dash to him. With sleeves and no side glances, cool as a plum in the refrigerator, not closed up, open and quick, he ascertains depths. The cat, plump yet springy as a lamb, sniffs at the applesauce, ambles away. Unflappable dancers stretching lean limbs in front of the mirror, from perpendicular to low port-de-bras, take pleasure in their limber reach. At Home Depot, an abundance of shoppers, appliances, piled-up lumber, plumb lines, and drain parts. She drops her hanging geranium in its planter to applause, and with equanimity she bows. The old yard abounded with plum trees. In June, fruit dropping like small leaden bombs from full limbs, and the yard would become crumbly toast under an ample layer of plum jam, then bumblebees. And this last one is called Reply. It's written as a letter, and I was very interested in the sound in thistles, the issel sound, wanting to see where else I could find it and what it was made of. Reply. Dear one, remember our moonset walk across the trestle bridge, trees full of parasitic mistletoe? Are you still eating beef tendon and gristle soup with noodles? My unattended yard now blooms with purple thistles. They fired guided missiles from the mainland, pointed like flying fish, landing with a piscatory splash offshore. Piss-poor shots, I'd say. The thistle is to stamen, as mortar is to pestle, as heart is to well-aimed pistol, as I am to your epistle, missing you, yours.
That was beautiful. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
I noticed that with words like thistle and also the title of your 2000 book, Isthmus, which I keep having trouble saying, that sometimes you include in your poetry words that are a little tricky to pronounce.
Tricky, and I very much enjoy the texture of those sounds, the thistle, gristle,
yeah,
parasitic, the dense consonants all crowded up together to see what they can do.
Well, my producer, the producer of this radio show and of the Poetry Night reading series, Evan White, has been telling me repeatedly over the last couple of weeks how much he's looking forward to tomorrow's reading at the John Itzulis Gallery, because he's been checking out your work online. And with him, I'm really pleased with the quality and variety and vibrancy of your work. And I'm really looking forward to tomorrow evening's performance that starts at 8 o'clock right down at First and E Streets in Davis.
It will be fun to be there.
Absolutely. Alice, it's a pleasure to meet you on the phone, and I look forward to meeting you in person tomorrow evening as I get to introduce you at about 8 o'clock at 521 First Street. Alice Jones will be the featured poet as part of the Poetry Night reading series. Thanks very much for coming today on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
And thank you so much.
Sure.
We'll see you soon.
See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.